Let's talk about the Atlanta Cup race, and if we have time, let's talk about the Atlanta Truck Race. First of all, let's just ask the question, was it a good race? I'm going to say no, and you can disagree with me, and it doesn't really matter. Who cares if you like a race or not? Clearly, there were high expectations for this race, and everyone pretty much knew it wasn't going to live up to the the expectations. And so for the last 3 or 4 days, there was already this media effort to say, well, don't judge it by this race. Don't judge the new package by this race. This is a tire, blah, blah, blah. They don't have the ducts in the front of the car, so they're not going to be able to draft as well. And then they pretty much laid out millions of excuses. And hopefully, we've gone over this before. I get really pumped and excited as well. And when the letdown comes, I get pretty frustrated, but I understand their point about, it wasn't really going to work well at this racetrack based on the tire wear. Although, really, there were teams that had tires fall apart at the very end, but like the tire wear, what I want to say about the tire wear is it didn't look like the guys that were managing the tires were winning. If you look at the race, Kyle Larson basically held it out full throttle. You did have guys who pushed it too far and messed up tires. We saw that with Busch, Blaney, Logano. We get that. But there wasn't the guys that managed the tires that won in the end. That wasn't the case. So the whole tire management story was nonsense and overblown, as it always is. And the racing was pretty terrible. If you really want to break down, now the first 10, 15 laps are awesome. And if we can get that sustained in the race at Las Vegas, then that's going to be really cool. I don't know why they didn't put the ducts in the front of the car. I guess it has to do with tire heat or brake heating or whatever. They got to figure that out, because first 10 laps, the restarts were great, but the guy that does kamikaze videos, and it's on YouTube, and he's very critical of NASCAR, and he has a great video about why NASCAR is pretty much dead and toast, and he hates this new package. He's hated the new package, and he compares it to the way racing was in 2015. And this was before the season he came out and said that. And if you watch this race, it was 2015. And what do we remember about 2015 and kind of 2016 was that the only time that you could do anything was on a restart. And once the race got moving and set in stone, or kind of got played out, then no one was passing. And it was all about crazy restarts, and you had to make your move on the restarts. That's kind of died down over the last couple years with the low downforce, because drivers actually put it back into their hands. They had the skill again to work their way back up and make passes. That seems to be gone again. And we're going back to the 2015 package, and I hate it because I wanted that guy to be wrong. I want to see IROC racing. We did not see IROC racing. Maybe we'll see it at Las Vegas. But I don't know really what the difference is. We're putting a lot of pressure on those ducts in the front of the car, air ducts, that are going to apparently create this great drafting system. I'm not sure we're going to get that. I'm pretty sure we're going to continue to get crazy restarts and then pretty much nothing. And you really will benefit from restarting in the right groove. Going into the race, that was one of my biggest, because there's a lot of variables that we didn't know, but the one thing that I knew was I'm going to try to roster the guys that are the best restarters in NASCAR. Blaney was one of them, and Blaney had a great race, barring the end. Larson is another one of them. Had a great race. Had a mistake, though, that took him out. And that's the other thing with this new package. Once you get a mistake and you go back into traffic, you're toast. It's game over. You are going to lose. Harvick, great at restarts. Kyle Busch, great at restarts. Logano, really good at restarts. Kurt Busch, great at restarts. Truex, all the guys that have been good at restarts were up there. And those are the guys that I'm going to focus on in the time being. If we're going to go back to what it was in 2015, if the only way you can get positions is on restarts, then those are the guys that I'm going to circle the wagons around and highlight every single week. Overall, bad race. There were some really cool, exciting moments, but you could not pass the leader, big surprise, but you couldn't pass anyone. Just to see Larson go from, there's a couple things that happened. One, to see Larson go from the front to the middle, and once he was in traffic, toast, that kind of sucks. To see Harvick's excellence at this track just completely get thrown out, his expertise, his skill, what he's been able to do is basically meaningless anymore. That's kind of tough pill to swallow. And you look at Austin Dillon. I'm not an Austin Dillon fan, but the fact that this thing comes down to, if you trim your car out to be really, really fast, but then once you get into the race, you're going to be absolutely terrible, that's kind of wild. And there's nothing you really can do about it, but then just take it and deal with it and sit there in 20th for the rest of the race. That's pretty insane. But a lot of teams talked about that was going to happen before. I can't remember which spotter. It was Clint Bowyer was talking about this, and I believe on the SiriusXM before the race saying that some people are going to completely nail this and some people are going to have a terrible race because they're just going to play the wrong setup. And apparently the play was to go with handling and it was not to go with absolute speed. And we saw some of the cars that were really good in qualifying that just did not have it in the race. All right, so let's just go through the finishing order and try to touch on what they did in race and for DFS purposes. Brad Keselowski is your winner, and he just kind of wins it by default because everyone else kind of decided to forfeit this race up. Brad Keselowski famously this week had a one-day flu. Let me give you guys a little bit of a hint here, because the devil knows his own, and you don't get a one-day flu. The flu lasts for a week. If you have a one-day flu, it wasn't the flu. It was you got drunk the night before in the infield. Trust me, I know what the one-day flu is. Once upon a lifetime ago, I would claim a one-day flu. And I was foolish enough to believe that people fell for it. But they didn't. Everyone knows there is no such thing as a one-day flu. And when you get tired of falling on the one-day flu excuse, then you go with the, I got food poisoning. Everyone at your workplace, back when I had an office job, they knew if you came and said, I got food poisoning, yeah, it wasn't the food that you ate last night. It was the liquid food that you ate last night. You probably had too much of that liquid food. Stick to the hard stuff, not the hard liquid stuff, but the hard as in an actual solid, and then maybe you won't get. But his excuse was, but his wife also had it. Well, what does that tell? It doesn't mean anything. If your wife also has a one-day flu, then she also was hungover. Well, if this race was on Saturday, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Yeah, because you were hungover, and the race was on Sunday, so you felt a little bit better. That's how those things work. But being that you drive a beer car, you can't come out and say, I'm hungover. And the media gives you a free pass because your sponsor pours tons of money and pours tons of toxic down people's throats. And so we look the other way, which is crazy because when Denny Hamlin gets hungover or drunk a couple years ago or misses a race and the media pressures him and they give him a hard time and they are relentless. It's a double standard, but when the beer car guy gets clearly hungover, no one even dares mention, I wonder if he's hungover. I mean, he was in the infield partying, and he's been known to go to the infield and hand out these cases of beer. No one dared ask that question. Whatever. Who cares? It's just a hangover. It's no big deal, but let's be honest about it. Trust me. I mean, if you're at work and someone claims that they had the flu for a day, you don't believe it. So when Brad Keselowski says, I lost 5 pounds and I had the flu for a day, why would we believe it? How is that the case? I'm sure they're going to say, no, he still has the flu. No, he doesn't. Get out of here with that nonsense. So he wins by default. He only leads 33 laps, but it's basically he pits. I think the caution came out right at the right time. And I mean, obviously, Logano had his issue. Blaney had his issue. Larson had his issue. For whatever reason, Kevin Harvick couldn't get the car running. So it was basically whoever wanted to win it. And even though it was Keselowski who gave the thing away at the end. He's fine, though. And Keselowski's a guy that has had really good races at Atlanta. And one of the things you always want to think about when rostering Keselowski, especially moving forward with this brand new package, him and Paul Wolf may not be the fastest done the first half of the race, but they figure the setup out throughout the race. They're one of the best teams at making adjustments. They clearly made the right adjustments and got a little bit lucky at the end. They definitely earned the win. Always have to consider Brad Keselowski, especially starting 19th. It was roster construction. Keselowski wouldn't even have been the play. Blaney was the play, but it just went the other way. Logano was the play, but it just went the other way. Larson was the play, but it just went the other way. Those are the things that breaks it happen in fantasy NASCAR. If you build enough lineups, then you probably had some Keselowski. The person who won the GPP, Jessica Hill, I would have never built that lineup. Sure, I was on a couple of those guys, but I wasn't going to build a Brad Keselowski, Martin Truex lineup. And maybe if you built 150, you would have, but I think she just went completely unconventional and built that lineup, and the thing just fell in her way. Awesome, congratulations. Martin Truex Jr. was right there the whole race, and I was never really considering him in there. And look, he finished second, but if all those guys don't screw up, he's more of a fifth to sixth place car. I think I put in the spreadsheet when I was just throwing down optimals that he could win this race or he could finish second. He's fine. I think he did a lot better than he should have. Kurt Busch finished his third. I don't know if he got in the optimal lineup again this year. He was in it last year. He was kind of, again, that stinky play that you didn't really want to do. But once you factored in the fact that, look, starting eighth at his price, he can get a top five, and you have to love his ability to restart and his aggressive racing early in a run. He's someone that you're going to want to consider. I know he wrecked at Las Vegas last year, but he was running up in the top five the entire race. He's going to be a guy, I mean, however way you want to try to predict what's going to happen in Las Vegas, if we see like IROC racing or truck racing, which truck racing is fun to watch. If we go back and say what was the best race of last week, it's easily the truck race's Xfinity race. The Cup race was the worst race to watch. It was longer. It was boring. It was a lot of single file lap turning. There wasn't much going on. The truck race, very fun. I know that Busch led most of it, but it was still much more fun to watch the battles going on in the back. Xfinity race was just fun to watch. Christopher Bell wheel that thing around. Much more exciting of a race. But Kurt Busch, even if this race turns into the side-by-side racing, you're still going to have that huge advantage of him doing well on restarts. Kevin Harvick, what a letdown, but he still did fine. And there were times where he felt like, oh, it's going to click here, it's going to work out. It just never could put it all completely together. 45 laps led, starts 18th, finishes 4th. That's fine. He was a fine play. I don't regret playing him. You shouldn't regret playing him. I feel more disappointed. Well, I guess the bigger picture is, the dominance at intermediate tracks in the past, all of that pretty much goes out the window. We don't know anymore. I mean, you look at certain night tracks where Martin Truex Jr. has been awesome. You kind of got to throw that out the window. Places where Kyle Busch has basically been good at every intermediate track. But the reality is, you just don't know what's going to happen. Blaney was really good. Another thing that I want to point out with Blaney, liking Blaney, is he's been good at the racetracks like Texas and Kansas, which are really nothing like Atlanta, or at least they were nothing like Atlanta, but those are just flat out, full throttle, full speed racetracks. Here we are this week. What are you doing? Flat out, wide effing open, running through the corners. That's almost like Blaney's style. He could have a really good year this year. I mean, this race was his to win if it wasn't for a bad pit stop and a caution at the end. That bad pit stop really killed him, and then obviously the tire was a problem then too. Clint Bowyer finishes 5th. He spent most of the time, though, in 10th. He benefits from some of the guys having bad races, but he had a fast car all weekend. He was kind of bouncing around. I think he did a little bit better than his average running position. We don't have the average running position data yet, but he was around a 10th place car. Decent at the end. Kyle Busch finished 6th. That's a bit of a disappointment, but after the fact, one theory, and now this might be Las Vegas, could be different. If Las Vegas turns into more of an IROC truck race, and holding momentum is really big, and Las Vegas has progressive banking, so you can run the high line much more effectively and not completely chew up the tires. But thought Kyle Busch would do better, but in the end, after the fact, this really wasn't an IROC truck race. This was a crazy restart like 2015, 16-ish, and then it gets spread out, and you're pretty much running single file, and it's very hard to pass anyone after that. And that's Kyle Busch starting in the back, remind you. Not very easy to make his way to the front. He got up there, and he was almost up there to the lead a couple times. He was okay. Little disappointing a priori, but am I using that right? Who knows if I'm using it right. But after the fact, it makes sense. We didn't get a truck race, so Kyle Busch didn't work. Eric Jones, again, so a theory that I put on Twitter was, if this is a truck race, and I believe the Las Vegas race will be much more like a truck race, then I want the recent truck drivers that have had success. Eric Jones is one of them, the guys who have recently been in the trucks. Obviously, Kyle Busch is one of them. William Byron won a championship for Kyle Busch Motorsports. I kind of like Bubba Wallace, who was in a truck recently. Daniel Hemric was in a truck recently. So all these recent truck drivers are guys that I want to consider that are used to this. You say, well, what about the Dillons? There's something about it. I don't consider them truck drivers, and they were always in such really good equipment, and I don't know. For whatever reason, I didn't include them, and you can see in the race, I was good to have faded the Dillon brothers. They don't seem to, I mean, they weren't truck drivers. That was just step one, so that they go to step two, so that they go to step three. The other guys were really in the truck series, and there was no guarantee, and they were very dedicated. I don't know if that makes any sense, but maybe that's some faulty logic in my head because of my own bias. But for whatever reason, when I think of the Dillons, I don't really remember. And I know Austin Dillon won a championship, but he won a championship in a ridiculously funded, well-funded truck. So you kind of got those out. And same thing in the Xfinity series. you're going to win in a series where you're outspending the rest of your competition and where you don't even have to win because all the wins are going to the big drivers or big cup drivers. Anyway, that's another tangent. But anyway, Erik Jones was a guy that I liked, and I rostered a good bit of Erik Jones. Erik Amirol finishes eighth. I think it's a halfway decent day. 36 laps led points. Probably had some fast lap in there. Obviously, he lost 7th place differential, but as price tag, not terrible. You knew that after that first caution, you knew rostering him, you're probably guaranteed up into the competition caution, and then from there, all bets were off, and that's basically what happened. He got the first 35, and then from there, nothing more. Buescher had a really good day, and so did Priest until he wrecked, and I liked Buescher a lot. And some people asked, I think it was a llama trainer, asked me about my love for Buescher, and originally asked me because my projection number was wrong, but I liked Buescher because I could see him making the right pit calls and working strategy and getting the restarts and just getting position and hanging on to position. I didn't see him as a 10th place driver. I think I had him as a 15th place driver. He ends up finishing 9th. But what it was is, and I would like to see exactly how he got up to where he did. But once he got there, you couldn't pass. As long as you held, and I would like to see on Motorsports Analytics how well he retains his spot on restarts from last year, if he was really good at retaining his spot on restarts. I know that AJ Allmendinger was one of the best at restarts. So if you have a good restart in this new package, then it becomes impossible to pass. And drivers said it's harder to pass this year than it was last year in the pack, which that's terrible. That's very, very bad for the racing. Let's hope that it fixes itself at Las Vegas. But we're not looking so good so far. We're headed in the wrong direction. And I don't want to be pessimistic, but I want to be realistic and not lie to myself, because if you think it's going to be a bunch of passing, that could change the way that you make your fantasy picks. If you think it's going to be pretty static, then guys like Chris Buescher, who can get a good restart, hold their position on restarts, and then just sit there and cruise. And that's kind of what we saw Buescher do. I didn't really see him passing cars. He would just restart 9th and retain his position the entire time. And that's what he kind of did the second half of the race. Hemric was doing the same thing. So it's still early to make those decisions. I would look more at the data on that. And I would really like to see his average running position. But once Buescher got there, he held on to his spot. I don't know if he got a couple times that he restarted in the preferred groove, but he got there and held on, and JTG Daughtry, I could never say Daughtry, Daughtry, Daughtry. There's a G in it. What the hell? There's a G. I haven't been able to say this since Brad played for the Cavs. I would much rather talk about Mark Price and Craig Elo than mention, and Brad Daughtry was not even the fun part of that team. Daniel Suarez finishes 10th. And he just kind of ran up there all day. He didn't really do anything. Denny Hamlin finishes 11th. That's probably disappointing for him, but I wasn't really on Denny Hamlin. Kyle Larson had the speeding penalty. What's crazy is once he got into traffic, the car just completely changed. And now he may have been one of the few people who had I talk about Austin Dillon having the car trimmed out for pure speed. That maybe that would work if you're one car basically leading laps. But once you're in traffic, you're pretty much toast. Something to look out for going forward. I can't imagine anyone's going to take that chance again. Everyone's basically going to say, you had the choice, right? You could either try to deal with the drag. If you just get rid of your drag and you go really, really fast, then you're going to be loose in the turns. Or you can deal with the drag to have a well-handling race car in the turns. It seemed like the well-handling car in the turns was the way to go, to not have it trimmed out for qualifying, but to have it a little more of a racy setup. Newman, 13th. I mean, you could see a lot of Newman this year, because Newman is another guy who's really good on restarts. So if he's good on the restarts, and we all know that Newman is basically impossible to pass, and Newman is a guy who will definitely block you if you have a run. And in this package, you have to build up momentum. I mean, it takes a lap and a half to set someone up to get that pass. And then if they just simply slide in front of you, you either run into them and wreck, or you have to back down, and then you have to start the entire game all over again. It's definitely an advantage to Newman in this goofy package right now. We'll see if we can get some iRockish racing next week. Paul Menard 14th. I don't even remember ever hearing about Menard. Alex Bowman, 15th. I don't really hear about Alex Bowman any. Well, the only thing you ever hear about Alex Bowman was him screwing with Logano. He was typically the last car on the lead lap the entire time, but he moves forward because of penalties and people having mistakes. David Reagan finishes 16th. Didn't hear of Reagan at all for the entire race, and then it's just people had issues. William Byron finishes 17th. I thought Byron would do better than that based on his truck racing background of Chad Knaus taking over. The answer is no. He was in 17th the entire race, basically last car on the lead lap the entire race. There is the Hendrick cars just did not look good. They did not look good at freaking all. Terrible. Terrible, 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 terrible. I will not be interested in any Hendrick cars next week. It's a firm stance that I'm making right freaking now. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., maybe next week, if this thing can get a little bit more plate racy, he just did not have it. Did not have a car. He was fine. Again, these guys who look like they probably set their cars up flat out speed, qualifying trim, got rid of all the drag, they were fine when they were in open air. And he saw Ricky Stenhouse looking pretty decent up front. Once he got the traffic, toast. Chase Elliott finishes 19th. Not interested in Hendrick whatsoever. Daniel Hemric finishes 20th. He was 8th place late in the race, maybe even 6th place late in the race, and he had that tire issue, and that's what screwed his finish up. But I loved him. I had him projected as a 10th. Now, I'm saying these projections, and I tell people in this spreadsheet, I basically just say ceiling projection just to give people, they should probably punch in their own numbers on the spreadsheet because I'm not selling picks. I'm not selling projections. But because it is my spreadsheet and I use it, I'll punch in some numbers to give myself a general idea. But I am not selling projections or picks. And if you don't like some of my projections or picks, well, I tell you that I'm not doing that. So just punch in your own numbers. You save the spreadsheet to your computer and you make your own stuff. Austin Dillon finishes 21st. He was terrible. Ryan Blaney finishes 22nd, but leads 41 laps. He was awesome in clean air. He was going to win this race. Bad pit stop, and then the Priest incident happens, and that was pretty much that. Joey Logano was going to win this race after Blaney, and then he had a tire issue. So that was that. The 22 car leads 22 laps. Jimmy Johnson was absolutely terrible. And you look at Jimmy Johnson, and he's just another example of these guys. And This is me doing this. I don't know if anyone else does this. But the tired phrase of, well, these guys grow a beard, and they get old, and they basically stop caring about racing. They go ride bicycles. We used to talk about that on the podcast all the time last year. People got a kick out of that. I would give Jimmy Johnson a hard time because all he really cares about is riding freaking bicycles like he's a member of Queen. But that's what he does. He's very into bicycles, and that's more power to him, but you probably should be more into racing cars. But that stupid narrative aside, and the stupid beard narrative aside, and the stupid idea about these drivers getting old, and you can look, Denny Hamlin's starting to grow a little bit of a beard too, so he's getting ready to make that career transition. Just wait for him to get the bicycle out, and then it's all over, Kenseth. But anyway, one thing that is true is that Johnson did really well in the era of overpowered race cars. High horsepower, a lot of driver skill, and that was when he won his championships. As they took the downfall, or as they've taken the horsepower away from these cars, Johnson has struggled. We saw Tony Stewart, same thing. He basically said, I'm out of here. Kenseth, that's probably one of the reasons why he started struggling at the very end. I would even argue that Dale Earnhardt Jr. did not do well in the Car of Tomorrow, and then the Gen 6 car, and the lowered horsepower. There's a handful of these car drivers that they basically changed the rules on. And the guys who grew up in the Xfinity Series and were running the Xfinity Series every single week were very used to these lower horsepower race cars, and they have transitioned pretty well. Johnson is not going to run well in a flat, you know who would do probably really well in this tight, flat-out throttle car? Probably, it's weird to say this, but I think Jeff Gordon would be really good in the car because it's full throttle and it's very tight, it looks like, for most people. And that's kind of like the race car setup. Jimmy Johnson's been a guy who loves his car to be loose. Well, you can't really have a loose race car in this. It's not really going to happen. Anyway, that's another tangent. Ty Dillon finishes 25th, typical Ty Dillon finish. Matt Benedetto, 26th. And so it feels like Bubba Wallace from last year. Remember Bubba Wallace had the great Daytona 500 and we were so pumped. I wasn't. Not me. Everybody else, and then just lays an egg at Atlanta. Well, actually, it wasn't completely his fault last year at Atlanta. If I remember correctly, Trevor Blaine's car blows up and there's just a giant cloud of smoke, and then Bubba drives into the cloud of smoke and then there's a wreck. He can't even see anything that's happening. That was last year, under the lights at Atlanta, because we got started a little bit later. Speaking of Bubba Wallace, he finishes 27th. That's kind of disappointing. We had high hopes, thinking, well, you know, all these cars are pretty much even. This should be a chance for Bubba. Not so much. Maybe next week. We aren't going to completely rule things out. We've only seen one racetrack, and to the defense of NASCAR and the teams, the car doesn't have the air ducts in the front, and the track surface is very worn out. When we get to Las Vegas, where they tested, and we watched them test here in January, we saw them do more pack racing, more side-by-side. Now, you couldn't take the leader out, but it was a little more racy. A lot more racy compared to what we saw today. Matt Tift, I didn't even remember hearing Matt Tift. I don't think I saw Matt Tift on the broadcast once. Saw Corey LaJoie on the broadcast more than him. And Corey LaJoie finished 29th, even though he smashed up his car. And then the punts basically did what the punts were going to do. Parker Kligerman was my favorite. It was him and Ross Chastain. I like both of them because they both ran the truck race Saturday evening. But it didn't end up being a truck race. Next week at Las Vegas, if I get Kligerman in a truck, I don't know if he'll be there or not, or Ross Chastain in a truck Friday night, I may also try to carry them over into the race on Sunday. BJ McLeod finished his 32nd, even though he got destroyed. You know who was really upset about this was Mike Joy. And I don't know if you know much about Mike Joy, but Mike Joy is really pissed at BJ McLeod. It has nothing really to do with BJ McLeod. He doesn't have a grudge against BJ McLeod. But BJ McLeod was the reason why Ryan Preece wrecked. And Mike Joy, although he won't say this and hasn't admitted this yet, but Mike Joy is a Northeastern guy. He grew up doing the broadcast, and he still is very invested in the Northeastern New England short tracks. That's where Ryan Preece has been running his entire life. And so Mike Joy is extremely biased towards Ryan Preece. And that came out loud and clear when he kept going over and over. I mean, we are 10, 15, 20 laps into the race, and the guy's going back into the Ryan Preece incident. Let it go. It's Ryan Preece. We're not really concerned about a 20th place, although he was in 10th place at the time or whatever. But he's typically a 20th place driver. Let's focus on the leaders. But he would not let it go. And then you got Cody Wearcastle, Preece, Garrett Smithley, and then Michael McDowell. That wraps it up. What can I take away? Restarts. Will we see some more passing this week? I don't know. We'll see in practice. One of the problems was they didn't run at the end of practice. Second practice on Saturday afternoon, we got to see a little bit of side-by-side. It wasn't side-by-side. A little bit of, we won't even call it drafting, but we had Team Penske and some Fords out there running some competitive race laps. And they really couldn't pass anybody, and they kind of just were stuck. And the spoiler, according to Larson, says it punches a giant hole there. And you may be able to get sucked up a little bit, but once you get close, it's just too much. And then your spoiler catches and drags you down, and you can't do anything. I don't know. We got to dial down. I mean, I was really excited. I'm still really excited about the truck race on Friday night. Will be absolutely awesome. One of the best races of the year. Saturday Xfinity race will be fine. It is what it is. If you like the Xfinity drivers, then you will be excited about it. And it's its own different style of racing. The Cup race, we'll give it another shot. And then we'll go on the Phoenix, and Phoenix will be just like it was in the past. So that's fine. And then we'll go in the Fontana, and we'll give it another shot. And that one might work as well. And then after that, we go to Martinsville. We're already in Martinsville in the middle of March, which is absolutely crazy. You might as well go ahead and get the snow ready for that one. Let's talk about the trucks really quick. Wait, actually, before that, I want to read the comments. Sometimes Racing Reference, you might be able to get some information on the comments. Sometimes you can get some... you know what? There's no way that I'm going to be able to go through this and find any funny comments, but maybe if I have a chance, I'll read through some of the comments and see if some goofy stuff pops out. Yeah, I don't have time to look through that. Let's go to the truck race and really quickly recap the Ultimate Tailgating 200. This sponsor jumped on the day before the race. That's always good for race economics when you sell the sponsorship the day before. I can't imagine the bargain that those guys got. So Kyle Busch wins. He leads 92 laps, and it's pretty much all Kyle Busch. And, I mean, he was just, I can't remember what stage it was, but remember, they do a restart, and he passes six cars in one lap. That doesn't happen in real life racing. That doesn't happen in simulation racing. That only happens in absolute video games. He went on the top groove and just flew by people. Johnny Sauter was up there the entire time, and it looked like at the end he kind of may have had something for Kyle Busch on that last long run, but then we had a caution. I don't know if Kyle Busch was just kind of toying around with him, if Kyle Busch's truck was going away. Still, that was an impressive run by Sauter in the 13-4 Thor Motorsports. Grant Infinger, the 98. I'm trying to remember. I think he was up there for most of the day. Brad Moffitt finishing fourth. I mean, these are the big names. He was up there. Ben Rhodes finishing fifth for Thor Motorsports. They were all kind of mixing it up, running around there. Ben Rhodes led 20 laps, actually. Ross Chastain for Nice Motorsports. A good race. He was, I think, the lineup optimizer. Liked Ross Chastain. He's 9,100, though. It was kind of tough to get him in. By the way, I don't know, might as well mention this. I finished second, half a point from winning the GPP. Half a point away from winning the GPP. Ah, still good. Still good truck race. Still good Xfinity race. Decent cup race. So, decent weekend for me and for people that use the spreadsheet. I got to imagine you did well if you used the spreadsheet. Austin Hill, I think he actually ran worse than that, but he ends up finishing 7th. Harrison Burton finishes 8th. One of the things in the truck race that was crazy was if you were on that outside line, you were toast. And I think Harrison Burton started on the outside line on the last restart. I really liked the Kyle Busch Motorsports trucks. I don't know if I mentioned that in the podcast. I'm pretty sure I did. I did the podcast Friday night where I basically said, you know, Kyle Busch, you got to lock him in. I also said in that podcast, you need to lock in Eric Jones for the Xfinity race. Hope you listened to that. I think I've already mentioned that, but I liked Kyle Busch, I liked Todd Gilliland, I liked Harrison Burton. I thought looking at their lap by laps that they had the best trucks, and they really were up their entire race. I can't completely remember the last couple restarts, but I'm pretty certain that Harrison Burton and Todd Gilliland were running a little bit better. I mean, I know Harrison Burton was in the top five a lot of that race. I just don't think the last couple restarts went his way. Timothy Peters was, I think it was like $8,000. He slotted in really well because he was starting in the back. You had to play Peters because, well, he's starting. I thought he started further back than 14th. Well, whatever. Tyler Dipple was not a guy that I was on for Young Motorsports. Young Motorsports is looking fine, though. Sheldon Creed, starting 4th, finishing 12th. I had no interest whatsoever. I know he's with GMS. I know he's the former ARCA champion, and he's going to get better. But starting 4th, I am not really interested in Sheldon Creed, and I don't even think he was at that much of a discount. Brendan Poole was starting 29th. He was another guy that I was going to have a lot of ownership of. Starting 29th, looked pretty decent in practice. He was in, the thing that worried me, he was running for Stephen Lane. I think I talked about this because I wasn't sure who Stephen Lane was. And I think I eventually found out, but I can't even remember now. I think I looked it up in the podcast. I've already forgotten it. That's terrible of me to have done, but here we are again. Crafton finishes 14th, and that was brutal because after practice, I really like Crafton. I think Crafton was either my second or fourth best car, and he was. He was up there the entire race, and then he got the penalty at the end that sent him into the back of the pack. And you know, once he was in the pack, it was going to be really hard to get out. And then you had that wreck, and there was not enough time, not enough laps for him to get back up to the front. That was really disappointing. I like Crafton a lot. He might have been in my cash line if I remember correctly. Gus Dean kind of surprised me, Young Motorsports. He starts 22nd, finishes 15th. I think the guy that won the GPP by half a point had Gus Dean. Corey Roper, I liked Corey Roper a lot, starting 28th. He just had a decent truck, and at his absolute price, he was in the 6,000s. There just wasn't any other choices, so he just went ahead and took Corey Roper. Anthony Alfredo finished 17th. He ran a little bit better than that. He was around 15th to 10th for David Gilliland. We already documented Alfredo talking plenty about him in the podcast the other night. I expect decent things. We talked about his one win, and he's got a couple cars wins, and he's former junior motorsports driver in the late models, so the guy definitely has a decent resume. Stuart Friesen starts 9th, finishes 18th. I believe he got into a wreck at the end, which he might have been in that wreck. Jordan Anderson, 19th in, just does nothing. Parker Kligerman was in the top 10. Kligerman got caught up in that wreck at the end. He was running 10th. I loved Kligerman a lot, starting 26th. That was disappointing. What are you going to do? He got caught in the wreck at the very end on that last restart. Corbin Forrester, I wasn't really paying attention to him. J. Joe Cobb finishes 22nd. That's quite impressive. Ran 130 laps. Not the guy, and I can't just write her off anymore. Let's see. Maybe she's got some funding. Maybe she's got a decent truck. We'll see what happens moving forward. Jesse Little had a terrible night. Jesse Little was in the wreck at the end. He may not have had a terrible ride. I don't think he had a good night. It wasn't a top 10. I think it was a little bit outside of that. Natalie Decker finishes 24th. That's not bad for as bad as she raced. I think she wrecked. She caused the last caution to come out, or second last caution to come out that caused that big wreck. She spun out in the infield. Spencer Boyd finished 25th. I can't remember if he was in a wreck or not at the end. Ray Ciccarelli. It's saying he started 9th on here. I thought he started further, closer to the front, but whatever. Or 19th. Austin Wayne Self, he got in a wreck. Chad Finley. So Chad Finley is, I loved him. Remember, I liked Chad Finley a lot. He was basically the obvious punt, and he ran route well. He was running, around 15th? At the very end, looked good. He was the clutch punt play. Hyped him up, and of course, he gets caught in the wreck at the end. And then their trailer wrecked after the race. But even going back further, you know who was in the Finley car the week before? Robbie Lyons, the guy that I talked up for the plate races. So, 2 weeks in a row, I put some sort of a hex or jinx on Finley. At Daytona, Lyons wrecks. Finley running really well with 10 laps left. He wrecks, and then as if the curse or hex I haven't put on is not enough, their trailer wrecks and smashes up their truck. I think the Vegas truck is all right, but I'm not completely sure. I don't know. I'm sorry. So I don't know if I've got a jinx that I'm putting on teams or if this is just simply the Finleys that I've now cursed. Norm Benning, who cares? Josh Room, still don't know how to say that, even after watching the race. Timmy Hill parks the car, and then Joe Niemczyk parks the car. Top 10 is about the drivers that you would think. So I don't know if you really learned anything from this truck part of the podcast, because I can't completely remember where people were running. Really, this showed us a lot of Kyle Busch. I guess the bigger thing is don't overreact to Matt Crafton's spot. Don't overreact to Chad Finley's spot. Don't overreact to, I think Alfredo was a little bit better. Parker Kligerman was a little bit better. I'm pleasantly surprised by Jennifer Jo Cobb. I think Todd Gill and Harrison Burton were a little bit better. But still, the guys that are proven experienced truck drivers like Sauter, Enfinger, Moffitt, Rhodes, even Chastain is really surprising. But the four guys I just mentioned, they're going to find a way to always be up there. Austin Hill did not. I bet I do have the. I got the lap data right here, so I can pull that up and see. I want to really quickly look at average running position since we've already run pretty long anyway. Might as well look and see what the average running position was for these cats to see who finished better than their average running position. Because I want to believe that Austin Hill, although big winner last year, paid a driver, that's not the best way to say it, just didn't have a very good race for Hattori Racing. So Sauter, average running position, 4th, get it. Chastain, 10th, finishes 6th. He benefits from some guys having problems at the end. Poole benefits from some guys finishing poorly at the end. I'm reading in terms of fantasy points. Grant Enfinger ran 4th the entire race, finishes 3rd. Ben Rhodes ran 5th the entire race, finishes 5th. Brett Moffitt ran 10th, finishes 4th. He benefits from, Crafton having some issues. And I think also the JGR, or the, sorry, Kyle Busch Motorsports cars. Corey Roper ran 21st, finished 16th. He benefits. But still, 21st out of Roper was going to be fine. Timothy Peters, 13th, finishes 10th. That makes sense. Gillen's 10th to 9th. Okay, so maybe I'm hyping Gillen up a little bit more than I should. Dipple, 18th. Average running position, finished 11th. Alfredo, I see it's kind of Alfredo, 19th average running position. I thought he ran a little bit better than that. Maybe he was just really terrible in the front end of the race. I felt like he was around 15th the entire race. Gustine, 22nd, but finishes 15th. There, Harrison Burton, average running position of 4th. That's the best. That's tied for the best with Kyle Busch, Johnny Sauter, with Grant Enfinger. I can't believe that Kyle Busch has an average running position of 4th. That does not make any freaking sense. But that's the data that they have released. That just does not make any sense that his average running position was 4th. Well, whatever. That cannot be right. That cannot be right. I have got to double check that. How is that possible? I mean, the guy led every lap. And I can't even believe why his laps led is that low. That can't be right. We've got to pull this up. And so that's what they say. What are you going to do? See, this is crazy. I don't think this lap data is correct. If you're looking 130 laps, how many laps did they run? The lap data that NASCAR has released, this is not right. And what the hell? So if I look at laps led, 45, 49, 54, 53, 63, 64, and then 68. There are only 68 laps led in the loop data. There's 138 laps. Where are the other laps led? I'm looking right. This is the official data released, and that doesn't make any sense. There's no way that Kyle Busch's average running position was 4th at this race. He was in 1st the entire freaking time. He had to have led more than 45 laps. I don't know where else I'm going to... So I'm going to go directly into my NASCAR media information and see what the hell is going on. That does not make any sense. Is there something I'm missing? I mean, I know, but yellow flag laps, those still count as lap led. I understand that they wouldn't be showing up for fast lap points, but laps led does not make any sense. Let me see. Race reports. Unofficial results. That's not what I want. 2019 stat package. Let's go to traditional stats, Atlanta, and then Gander post-race stat pack. Let's look at that. Look at that PDF. And this is not really what I want, but I will look at it anyway. That's not what I want, so I don't want to look at that anyway. All right, let me keep... This is a riveting podcast, but I want to know the answer, and I don't want to do this later, so we're doing this now. We're going to do it live. Post-race notes. No, I don't want penalty reports. I just want the results. Where is the result? Points reports? I never really go into this stuff. Not the post-race stat pack. Race report. There we go. This is not right. What the hell? This is very frustrating, and I apologize. So, yeah, I think 92 laps is what he led. That's not the number I want. There should be a different sheet that I'm looking for. Post-race notes and reports. Post-race fast facts. Is that it? No, this is not it either. This is very frustrating, and this is terrible podcasting. Let me see if I can go here and do it. No, that's not going to give it to me. That's not going to give me what I want. Son of a bitch. Now I'm cussing on the podcast, losing my mind. I just want to see the finishing results. And the stupid file that it's giving me looks absolutely terrible, and it's not what I want to see. But I'm pretty sure what I'm seeing here is that he led 92 laps. That's got to be what that means. This is incredibly frustrating. Let me just go to NASCAR.com, then. Maybe they'll have the results that I want to look at. And, they've changed their page around, so this is a pain in the ass. But here we go. Still cussing up a storm. No, this will do it, yeah. I'll just go to the traditional way. So if I go to NASCAR.com and Gander Outdoor. So here we go. Yeah, Kyle Busch led 92 laps. Now, hopefully that's the data that got sent into DraftKings, I hope. But the data that is going to a major feed is completely wrong. And whatever. What am I going to do at this point? Actually, let me just double check. I could probably pull this up on my phone to make sure that did DraftKings get the right data? They had to have gotten the right data. But let's pull it up. Exciting stuff on the podcast. Listening to a guy look up stats. Very boring. What annoying. How could this get any worse? Got it. That's not the one that I wanted to look up. I'm looking up all the wrong stuff. There it is. Here we go. And let me pull this up. Yeah, all right, good. DraftKings had the right stats, but the place I'm importing from has got the wrong stats. Awesome! So, that's annoying. So, how do I even know these numbers are right that I'm reading to you, but whatever. Nonetheless, let's look at Austin Hill's average running position was 7th. Now, put an asterisk next to that because I don't know how they came up with. Maybe Kyle Busch's average running position was 4th. Who knows? Matt Crafton's average running position was 6th, and he finishes, what, 14th? Klingerman's was 15th. He finishes 20th. That sounds about right. Stuart Friesen's was 8th. He finished 18th. He had that issue. Jesse Little, 14th, about like what I said. Sheldon Creed, 11th. But him starting 4th, you weren't going to play him. Yeah, how can Joe Nemechek have a 19th running position when he didn't even run maybe half of the laps? What the hell? Get out of here with that noise. What did Chad Finley? Chad Finley was running 23rd, so that's pretty good. All right, so that'll do it for the podcast. Try to do a better job of maybe taking some notes next time after the truck race to write down so that I can make sure I have something to say like I did with Xfinity Race. I think I told you everything you need to know about the Cup Race. Again, you go to racefortheprize.com or dfsnotes.com and get the spreadsheet. Just send $5 my way. Get whatever sheet you want. So now we're looking at what's it going to be for the month of March. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to have much of it. I think I've got something written down. I think, what was it last week? $43 for March and Atlanta. So something along those lines. I got to look and see how many races there are in March to see what the price is going to be. But nonetheless, you can spend $5 to get a sheet when you want a sheet or not when you don't want a sheet. Truck race, I think, like I know a lot of people out there really want to focus on the Cup. There's $100,000 on the line of the Cup. That's cool. You do you. And then everyone else kind of wants to go into Xfinity because for whatever reason you like Xfinity more, you feel more comfortable with it. I get that as well. People are less likely to buy the truck sheet, which I believe that's a big mistake. But I'm not going to stop you because that's fine, because if you don't play the trucks, it's an advantage for me. I really believe that there is an early edge, and I've said this before, in playing the trucks, because not a lot of people are playing the trucks. There isn't hardly any information out there to help people with the trucks. The best information, I believe, is in this damn spreadsheet for the trucks. I finished 2nd last week, half a point from winning the GPP. Did really, really well. And another guy did really, really well. There just isn't any truck information out there. So you have a huge advantage when you use the truck spreadsheet, and you can look at the lap by laps and figure out, oh, this guy looks like he's going to be pretty good in this truck. It helps you find the Chad Finleys. It helps you find the Ropers. It helps you find the Kligermans. It helps you find the Ross Chastains. I know you guys know about those guys, but it helps you make sure that, oh, I definitely feel comfortable rostering this guy. So I would encourage people to really think hard about playing the trucks more than anything else. But if you don't listen to me, that's fine too, because it's an advantage to me, and I really don't want to split the money with you. Preferably, I win the GPP by myself. So if you don't take up the $5 on it, that's okay. It's not a big deal. But I'm telling you, I believe there's a little bit more of an edge. You're probably not seeing a lot of guys go 150 entries on the Truck Series just yet. And the race will be this Friday night, so that means it's head-to-head against the Friday night big-time dollar NBA GPPs. So a lot of guys that maybe play the Sunday GPPs and NASCAR and put a lot of entries into it, because there isn't really any other action on Sunday. There's some NBA, but there's not a big slate of games. And so there's not a big slate of games. A lot of the big-time players tend to stay away from those small pool or small slates, because the small slates take a little bit of their advantage away. More of their edge comes when they can go mass entry and they can cover a lot of games, cover a lot of the wilder out-of-the-box plays. Also, they can simply do more research. When you have a small slate, everyone knows all the players and all the plays, and you kind of get bunched up, and sometimes you see people, you know, sharing a lot of the same plays. So I can see why some of those big players navigate towards NASCAR on Sundays. They're probably on Friday night going to play the NBA more likely than them playing a truck series that gets $5,000 in first place. But that's, you know, I'm not selling you on anything. But if you want the $5 sheet, you know where to come to get it. I apologize if I offended any Brad Keselowski fans by insinuating that he got hungover. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, folks. It's okay to have had too much to drink and be hungover. We're all adults. We're all, I hope, we're all humans. It's completely fine. And I don't think anyone has a problem with it. It's just a little bit weird or disrespectful to, maybe not disrespectful, but yeah, it kind of is, because he treats us like we're idiots. Come on, man, just be honest. Now, maybe he did. Maybe he just got some one-day flu. I don't know. That seems very strange to me. I've never heard of it, but it could have. Anyway, I was supposed to apologize. I'm sorry if I offended any of those guys. Long podcast today.